really important, and it pulls on the Thursday class, it pulls on the Saturday class, it pulls on the all-week-long class, it pulls on every class that we've been having for the past I don't know how long. But I want to, let's, I mean, what are we doing here? So we have in this very preliminary prayer in the beginning that we're paying homage to the great teacher Shakyamuni Buddha, whether that's your root guru or not. Whether you've taken the refuge and you are a devotee, a disciple of Shakyamuni Buddha, or whether you're just one of those people that come to hear because, you know, apparently he was super intelligent and worth listening to, that's great. Paying homage to him is that he's been gone for, what, 3,000 years almost? No, 2,500? 2,500 years. I was thinking in the... And so, we're still paying homage to him by getting together as a group to listen to these teachings, to listen to his words. That's still paying homage, because Buddha said, when I'm gone, I'm not coming back again. But my essence will remain in all of my teachings. So when we get together to listen to those teachings, which, by the way, is dharmically called good association, You're doing a spiritual practice called good association. And that helps with prajnaparamita. It helps develop this pristine, perfect wisdom. That wisdom is discriminating. It's to learn the difference between that which gets us intimately closer to this enlightened state and that which doesn't. And when we do good association, we get together to hear or chant or speak or sing or dance or play music or whatever it is for the purpose of Dharma. Our intimacy with the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, grows. When that grows, our wisdom grows to say, wow, this is really good. And when I go to the bar and get drunk and go to jail, that's not good. So I'm going to stop doing that one and do the other. This is called wisdom. You may laugh and go, wow, really? Well, yes, it is. Because the more refined that becomes, you recognize, oh, well, I shouldn't do this subtle thing that I normally do. Because why? It makes a mess of everything. So, then it says here, and we're also paying homage to the wondrous teachings, the Buddha Dharma. That's where we're going to get this whole stuff from. And then it says, and the Sangha, this community, the ordained and the devotees, the followers, that community getting the good association again. So, we chant this Namo, which means, I pay homage to you, or... you know, in very vernacular English, I think you're really cool. That's what we say. I think you're really cool, Shakyamuni Buddha. Because that's how we give homage here in America today. We don't go around going, oh, world-honored one, I bow before. We don't do that kind of stuff. We just go, wow, that was cool. So we're telling him, well, I think you're really cool by saying it in Sanskrit. Namo Shakyamuni Buddha. You're super cool, lion of the Shakya clan who's enlightened. That's what you're saying. Now look, we've been given the profound, beautiful Dharma. We have, in this very moment of good association, we have the opportunity to do these three things. We can hear it. And here we go. This is where it's all going to happen. Hearing is super important. Yes, I know. Blue Lotus, or for that matter, CAB, the Center for American Buddhist Practice, the building that you're sitting in, is not a... well, it's actually nothing. Let's do that. It's nothing. So in that case, we have no anything. So that means you can choose if you want to be a Zenist, or you want to approach it from the Hinayana path and be a recluse, or you want to be a yogi and just and go out into the whatever. But all of them start in the same place. which is to hear. But hearing is important because we don't know how to hear. It's not really hearing, it's listening. It's dharmic listening. Dharmic listening means, according to the scriptures, we listen as an empty vessel. We listen as an empty flower pot. Nothing in it. We empty everything out. And so the way that we have a problem doing this is when we're listening with the peanut gallery kind of commentary in our heads. Ooh, I like the sound of that. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, those kind of things? Or the whole, well, they're saying you have to read scripture. Well, what if I'm riding on an elephant? How am I going to, we get these crazy, it is called discursive thought because it's taking you away from the underlying meaning of what's being said. Because all dharma is a total lie, word-wise. There's no words that are true. Why? Because they're explaining the indescribable. So there's no way to talk about what it really is. That's not true. We can't say what it is. We can only talk about it. We can talk around it. We can't actually say it. If we could say it, we'd be enlightened right away. That's why Sanskrit's so good. Right? Because Sanskrit, you can. How? Om da-da-do-da-da-do-a-swa. So I just did. And you go, well, what does that mean? Because we can't hear. So if I explain to you the great Tara mantra of Jetson Droma, I can only talk about around. I can't give it to you because I would have to be describing this mantra that's not describable. This is why books won't lead you to anything. Because a book can't tell you anything. It's why you got to have that Dharma teacher, that spiritual friend, that person who's traversed it and knows how to kind of show you. I mean, we can read cookbooks all we want, but unless somebody shows us the actual technique and takes our hand and goes, no, you have to do it like this, we're not going to be good cooks. That's why you got to go to, these big culinary art schools if you want to be a chef. You can't just read books and go, look, I'm a chef. It won't happen. You'll never win a Michelin. No James Beard Awards, nothing. And it's the same is true with the Dharma. So what does that mean, how to listen, like a vessel? Is your pot of pottery empty?
No.
Oh, wow, I don't even have a... Here's one.
Here you go.
Look, I have a pot of pottery. Can you guys see that? This copper cup? Because when I look at the screen, I can't see it, but because I look backlit. This is empty. There's nothing in it. And look, I'll pull this up. See, so I don't have sleeves. All right? I want to show you. I have nothing in my hands. Watch. It's still empty. Nothing's in there. You see that? That's a good trick. It's a trick because if this represents the mind, and I go like this, oh, listen to this, and I go like that, a whole bunch of dirt falls out. The magic trick is to go like this. Now, listen to this. Form and shunyata are exactly the same. Ooh, it's still empty. That's the trick. Because then the teachings can become part of you. They'll course through your, what do we call, channels, and it'll get carried in the winds, and then it will start to merge and mingle and dance with the drops, the conscious seeds. Look what it says. The next word says, and study it. Now, studying is very, very interesting because it's not academic at all. If you academically study Dharma, I would recommend go to a very good culinary school instead, because you can become a great chef. If you do culinary study of Dharma, you won't become anything great. Well, okay, I concede. You'll be a fantastic egomaniac. You'll be able to say, well, that scripture wasn't really written back then. It was written in 1094 by this guy who lived in this town of blah, blah, blah. And he wrote it with a... And everybody's going to be like, and why do we even care? Well, because you were saying it was written in 932. And if it was written in 932, then... Blah, 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 and nobody's going to care. Because that will not lead you to anything. You'll be the master of Buddhist trivial pursuit. And how many of you have ever gotten a fantastic job or a great reward by being a trivialist? I mean, minus you guys that go to the bar and play Trivial Pursuit and win drinks. I'm not talking about that. But you're not going to accomplish anything with academic study. I know. I spent 6 years doing it, and it was a gigantic waste of time. I mean, it was helpful later when I was teaching, because then when people asked me those ridiculous questions like, well, when did this happen, and who was he talking to? Okay, so I knew that, but it had nothing to do with my spiritual development at all. So what does it mean to study it? If we're hearing like this empty thing, nothing in it, and then we're going to study, and we didn't collect any of this information, so we really don't have anything academically to do, because we didn't let those little thoughts go in there and mess with our heads. Then how do we study? We study by doing a thing that all of you students or former students do, which is called cramming. Anybody ever done that? You know, you got your midterms or final exams and you got to cram. And why do you cram? What is the primary purpose of cramming, anyone?
Pass a test.
To pass a test? And how does, what is the technique that cramming is supposed to do for you? Yes, recalling. You cram in order to recall the information when asked the question. The study of Dharma is the recall without cramming. In fact, it's the recall without ever thinking about anything. Anyone not know what I'm talking about? Raise your hand. Hopefully it's everyone. Oh, wait. You guys all know what I'm saying? Because if you know where I'm going with this, then we can just get back to the service, because I made a mistake.
No,
and
please
didn't...
explain for the benefit of all.
For those that don't know what I'm talking about and don't want to raise their hand, because I raised mine. Listen, you are recalling your nature. You go and hear the Dharma, you listen to the teachings, you listen to the instructions, you listen to all this stuff, like an empty vessel just taking it in order to study it, which is doing nothing other than recalling your actual nature. So when the Buddha says, samsara, great suffering, dukkha, shittiness. And when you are in those states, you should say to yourself, oh look, my mind is in a shitty state, which is not me. I am not what my mind is doing. This horrible situation has arisen around me, makes me feel terrible. But my feelings are not me. Because my true nature is the enlightened state, is Buddha. And so, when the Buddha keeps telling us this stuff, and we listen like an empty vessel. We have nothing to think about. And then we just start to recall. That's the studying of Dharma. We begin recalling and we go, wow. Oh yeah, that's right. I came out of the astral realm. I was just recently totally enlightened. And then I came down here for whatever reason. You know, I got some karmas in my bank account. So I come down here to spend it all, right? Because you don't want to take it with you. You got to spend all of it. You want to burn it all up. So you incarnate to burn it all up. You come down here and you go, woo! Let me tell you a story. Tukaram is an amazing, amazing yogi in India, long time ago, 1200s, maybe 1300s. Absolutely genius yogi. And his daily practice, even though he lived in a community, he would go off and do his meditations alone in a cave. He liked to do meditations by himself. But he had a friend, his cat. Tukaram's cat. And this cat would go with him, would follow him into the cave, and then he would sit, and the cat would literally sit right in front of him, facing him, and would sit. And so the cat and he would meditate 4 or 5 hours, you know, and then they'd be done, and then they would go. So one day, they're meditating, and this great yogi, he's sitting there in his meditation, and the cat is sitting across from him, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the cat jumps and does a screech. Or, you know, whatever the cats do. And then Tukaram says, What just happened? Because, you know, he got disturbed out of his meditation. And the cat says to Tukaram, man, I was like deep in this samadhi state, and I was soaring all through the cosmos, and I was free and liberated, dancing with the Buddhas and the Dakinis and all of this, and it was amazing, and I was without limit. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I realized I was stuck in this island of fur on planet Earth. And Tukaram says, I know exactly how you feel. That's remembering. That's recalling. The cat, Tukaram's cat, realized, I'm not this cat. I mean, I'm here right now to, you know, use the attributes of being a cat, which is to purr and make people pet me. So, and that's it. That's his karmic thing. And to tell people when to go away. Because that's all cats do. Is pet me now, I'll purr, and that's enough, go away. And so, when the cat realizes his actual enlightened nature, he's recalling. That's the study. So look, we get together. We're getting together in good association. This is all super positive and powerful to all come together in order to empty ourselves out of any form of our egomaniacal clingings and attachments. Throw those out. Listen. Without any kind of opinion or any kind of anything, and then study it by just recalling our nature, true nature. And then the last one here, it says, and then apply. And the way that we apply is when we start to remember our nature, something really twisted happens. And I say twisted because it doesn't fit well with this realm that we're in. It's not a very earthly thing. And that is, we become, brace yourself, super happy. Yeah, we start getting joyful. And I don't mean the kind of joy where, you know, somebody gets you the gift that you want and you're super happy for 4 or 5 days and then it goes away. I'm talking about that joy that's down in the pit of your stomach that makes you feel like you're going to throw up. You know, that kind of joy where you're just like, ugh, why do I feel so good? Right? I just want to walk around hugging people. You know, that kind of horrible, like, toxic feeling. You're becoming like a zombie overrun with loving kindness and compassion. And it's like it begins to infect you. And you can't get rid of it. And the applying is letting it out. So you start actually like doing nice things to people and yourself. You start singing and chanting and saying mantra and like putting, you know, just wow. And the other part of applying is it goes even further than that, where you start to express it outwardly by like putting pictures of enlightened beings like everywhere. You hang them on the wall, you put little statues up, you put flowers on them, you light candles, you start doing incense, and you're just like, oh, and you just start like falling in love. It's this horrible thing in this world. It's terrible because, you know, we're supposed to be suffering, right? That's what everybody always, oh no, because for some reason Buddhists think they should be very stoic. You know, just stare at walls and don't smile. And that's enlightenment. You know, this whole stupid concept of Zen, which is completely ass backwards and not even correct. It's a total misunderstanding. It's a misunderstanding because that's not our culture and we don't understand what's actually happening there. And they don't bother to tell you. So you have a complete misunderstanding of what's happening. Look at the last line. We vow to realize its deepest meaning. That is, let's go beyond enlightenment. Let's go beyond nirvana, beyond enlightenment, and let's go and dive deep into the deep blue sea of our actual conscious state. Then we want to say, wow, this Buddha guy is actually super cool. For even like talking about this. And then that starts to come out and we start doing stuff like Om Namo Shakyamuni Buddha. Not recalling. Just sit in your actual nature. Give yourself permission to just be there. You are not your stories. You're not your troubles. You are not your faults. You're not your shortcomings. Depression. You are. just so that I can practice devotion. By pretending to be some kind of messed up, confused thing, because you're not really, you're just fooling me. And some of you have fooled yourselves. But it's just not true. The scriptures say that we should take refuge, and that we should make some offerings, and then share our consciousness or the merits with others. So we're going to do a slightly different kind of refuge. And so if you repeat after me, I take refuge in the Buddha nature.
I take refuge in the Buddha nature.
Which is my true self.
Which is my true self.
And I take refuge in the Dharma.
And I take refuge in the Dharma.
Which is nothing more than me understanding.
Which is nothing more than me understanding.
That which is beneficial.
That which is beneficial.
And that which is not.
And that which is not.
And I take refuge in the Sangha.
And I take refuge in the Sangha.
Which is good association.
Which is good association.
That encourages myself and others.
That encourages myself and others.
To recall our true natures.
To recall our true natures.
So this is a good, positive way to take refuge. And to make offerings, we should also make offerings in this way. I offer on the altar,
on the altar,
my eyes as lamps for seeing,
my eyes as lamps for seeing,
my ears as the conch for hearing,
my ears as the conch for hearing,
my sense of taste as food,
my sense of taste as food,
and my heart as flowers,
and my heart as flowers.
This collection And including all of my delusive thoughts and my mistaken identity,
and my mistaken identity
that I so cling to, I lay as an offering on the altar to the enlightened ones,
on the altar to the enlightened ones.
Please accept this offering. And bless me with liberation. And total recall. And complete devotion. And so this is how you make offerings on a daily basis. Your offering should not be a mechanical thing of looking at these lists going, oh, well, I got to put this up there, and I got to put that up there, and I got to put a rice and a water. It should be just like that. That bowl of rice representing flowers, that's the heart. My offering to pure heart and the impure heart, I'm sacrificing to the enlightened ones my deluded self. They can have that. We'll light it on fire like camphor, big giant flame, and there'll be nothing left, no ash or anything in the end. And we offer that as a sweet incense. You pour some water and you think, oh, you know, this sense of touch, I'm going to offer the body. I'm going to offer my sense of touch. Or when you put food up, I'm offering my sense of taste. So that whatever I taste is nothing more than that the enlightened connecting with this space, which is the whole purpose of the body, is to experience this realm. Not the story, just the experience. And then sing. Spend all your time singing. Sing mantras, sing whatever. I mean, you can just go to YouTube. Just pick a mantra you like and type in there. How to sing this mantra. And you'll hear people. And some of it's so beautiful. And just start singing it. Find one you like. And don't ever stop. Sing it to get deeper and deeper and deeper into remembering you. Remembering you. Remember you. And in remembering you, every person that you see around you, remember them. Oh, that guy that just gave me the bird because I accidentally, you know, cut him off or whatever it was in traffic. So great to see Avalokitesvara. So wonderful to see Manjushri, who's telling me that my bank account went into the negative and they're charging me extra. Wow, Manjushri, so great to see you. Because he's reminding you to sing more. Remember you. That doesn't mean that you ignore your duties here. But when you do those, you just think, I don't know what the outcome is, so I don't care. I'm just going to do my duty of whatever that is, paying my bills, doing my job, taking care of family, friends, whatever it might be. I'm just going to do that because I remember their nature. And being able to do this allows me to serve them as that guru incarnate in this form. And the outcome belongs to them and I have nothing to do with that. So if it works out, more power to them. Jai, guru. Victory to the guru because they won. If it didn't work out, better luck next time because that was just my karmic fault. And now that I've burned that, the next one will be Jai Guru. Don't let it stop you. And then sing. Sing, sing, sing. Just do more mantra. Just, or whatever it is that, you know, paint flowers. I don't care. Write poetry. Do something. To stay in the expressive state. And if you fall out of it, that's fine. Remember. And if you can't remember, what was I again? Listen. Go quiet. In the military, they call it going dark. Go dark. Just shh. Breathe. Om. And mantra is my thing. This, I'm a Nagpa, so I'm all about mantra. Om. Oh, wait, here comes the remembering. Oh yeah, there's the remembering. Om dare tu tare tu re soha. Om dare tu tare tu re soha. And then you just start, and then you're going to be like, I can't contain that, so now I'm going to go paint a picture to Tara. I'm a terrible painter, but I'm just gonna spread paint all over. I'm gonna call it a lotus, and I'm gonna offer it to Tara. I mean, she just loved this lotus that I drew, which is worse than what my own 4-year-old draws. But I did it out of deep devotion because I just can't stand it. I'm too in love. I can't handle it. I gotta express it. That's it. That's your whole practice. Now you're all yogis. I didn't mean to trick you into it, but not, that's it. Now you can be just run around going, yeah, I'm a yogi. Why? Well, because I just sit and blank myself out of crazy thought, and I just listen. I listen to the breeze in the trees. Well, not now, because there's no leaves. But so I listen to the snowfall. I listen to the rabbits and squirrels like crunching through the snow. I listen to the crackling of fire. I listen to the sound of the heater. The air blowing from it. I listen to the sound of the plows going down the street. I just listen. And then I start to remember. All I am is experience without any story. And then the heart begins to swell. And then you got, and then there comes the song again. And then once the song hits, well, then you just can't stand it. And you jump up, you start dancing, and you start going back. And it's called bhav in Sanskrit. And you go back into this bliss state. And you, oh yeah, there it is. And then you look at the person who's looking at you like you're completely insane. And you go, oh, so, yeah, sorry. That's why I'm a yogi. And they go, whoa. You're woo, and you go, well, yeah, because this place isn't really made for that. I mean, it's made for it, but the delusion is that it's not. That's why all real yogis are really crazy. They're out there, they're wacky. I mean, look what I just did. We didn't even do Sunday service. I apologize to all of you that came for the, you know, the normal show and tell Sunday service, but we had a great class last night. We're doing a class on how to do giant pujas, and I'm still in it. I'm still in it. So I see just one line, and it just sets me off going, yeah! See, I want everybody to have that kind of love and that kind of devotion and that kind of just, you want to jump out of your skin. This stuff is great! Samsara is a total stupid dream. And this is what is. Sickness, dream, all that. Don't we have a song like this? We have a song like this. I'm not going to play it because you can't hear the harmonium that well. But I'll come down there and I'm gonna play it. And it says, look, life is completely sweet. And this whole idea of dying and being this miserable person, all that is just a dream. That, just like you're dreaming last night and your alarm clock went on and it's gone. There's no trace and there's no element. It's the same thing. And look, you know what else is sweet? Where's the rest of this line? Joy, completely sweet. And all the sorrow and depression and anger and all those horrible things that you always feel. That's dream. That's not real. I mean, it's real in that you feel it. Yes, I know you feel it. But the story behind it is not real. And it's not even you. It's just more experience. But your deep joy, going through those four stages, that's you. That's your nature. That's what you are. You're just that. Om Sat Tat. You're just that. That's all you are. Health. Mental health. Health of speech, health of the body, health of the spirit, health of the channels, health of all of that. It doesn't matter if you're out doing asana yoga and bending yourself with like a pretzel, or you have a really good diet, or you don't do anything. You just lay around and you're lazy. You know, it doesn't matter. Because look, if you are in the bliss state of your true being, then all your sickness, that's just a dream. It won't go with you. Just like you can't take money, you know, they always tell you, you can't take money with you when you die. You can't take any of this with you except your joy. I mean, if you really cling hard enough, yes, you can bring your sorrow and all that crap, but why? And praise is completely sweet, and blame is a total dream. The Buddha used to say, yeah, people, you know, they smite me all the time. They tell me, you know, how terrible I am. This is the Buddha speaking. He actually said this. They're always reminding me how, like, horrible I am as a person. And then there's a whole other group of people that are like, wow, he's so great. And the students go, yeah, how do you deal with all that? And he says, well, all those people that are always slandering me and telling me that, you know, I'm just crazy and I'm worthless and I'm just a, you know, a fanatic and all of that. I ignore it because they don't know me. They don't know anything about me. And all those people that praise me and they say how great I am and how fantastic I just ignore that. And they go, you ignore that? He goes, yeah, because none of them, they don't know anything about me. They don't know me. That's a yogi. The inner story doesn't matter. The outer story doesn't matter. You just remember what you are and you just engage this world like that. And we share that consciousness with every being by saying, may all hindrances be pacified. May we be separated from unfavorable conditions. May we achieve favorable conditions and everything excellent. Through this fortune, may there now be happiness and health. Recite it with me. It's in your book. Turn to your closing prayer.
Closing prayer. It's on the back of the third page. Dedication prayers.
We're going to do that one. Okay, not the other one, not the one before it. We're going to do this one. This was written by Venerable Tom Graham. My precious teacher, our founder. My guru. Look, I'll have to read it along with you because I'm going off again. May all kinds of hindrances be pacified. May we be separated from unfavorable conditions. And may we achieve favorable conditions and everything excellent. And through this fortune, may there now be happiness and health. And when we say we mean everyone. Think of everyone. May all hindrances be pacified. May we be separated from unfavorable conditions. And may we achieve favorable conditions and everything excellent. And through this fortune, may there now be happiness and health. Let's chant Om together.